pornography. The affiant of that search warrant, Sergeant Pryor, specifically requested the search warrant include the search of any vehicles on the premises due to the portability of electronic media that can store child pornography. And the judge granted that. Now, when executing the search warrant, the officer searched a recreational vehicle, an RV, or trailer that was located on the driveway of the property of 720 College Street Road. District Court erroneously found that the officer's search of the RV exceeded the scope of the search warrant. When there is a valid search warrant that specifically authorizes the search of any vehicles, does the RV constitute a vehicle? That is the question in this case. At first, I'm with the common understanding of that term. Black's Law Dictionary defines a vehicle as an instrument of transportation or conveyance. Then you have the law, both under Missouri and Pennsylvania. And federal law, a trailer or RV is defined as a vehicle. First point to Missouri law. Missouri Revised Statute 301.016 defines a trailer as any vehicle without motive power designed for carrying property or passengers on its own structure to be drawn by a cell phone.
That's really a trailer, right? It's a trailer if it doesn't have its own power.
That's correct. Correct.
Yeah.
And in this case,
so what we have here really is a trailer, right?
A trailer, and it's also commonly known as a recreational vehicle.
But you said it was in the driveway. It wasn't actually in the driveway. It was off the driveway on a separate path.
Your Honor,
it wasn't like you. It wasn't in the driveway when you drive up to the garage, correct?
That's correct. Part of the RV did extend out into the grassy area.
But there is a separate pad for parking recreational vehicles, as I understand it, and it had a in-ground sewer holes connection.
Your Honor, it was connected not to sewers, connected to water and electric. It had lines that were running to connect water and electric.
Well, I understood there was an in-ground port for a sewer holes as well.
That was not at evidence in this case. I do not believe that was what was testified to during the suppression hearing, but it had lines for both water and electric. But there was no sewage. And this was just a residential property where the RV was parked right next to the truck that had the trailer hitch that was used to convey the trailer or RV on a public roadway. But I do not think there was any kind of sewage. Similarly, the Pennsylvania statute also defines the trailer as a vehicle defined to be towed by a motor vehicle. And 49 CFR 571, federal regulations also defines a trailer or RV or recreational vehicle as a vehicle. But aside from what it's defined as just a law and by its common term, this RV had all the outward signs of being a vehicle. Every aspect of this is an RV. It was readily mobile. The district court found that in its opinion that this RV was readily mobile. That's a defining factor of a vehicle, that it's mobile, that it The RV was affixed with fully inflated tires and capable of being attached to a cab delivery very quickly. The evidence was it would take approximately 30 minutes to get the RV hitched up to the truck.
But it was not objectively being used as transportation at the time of the search, right?
That's correct.
In terms of Carney?
In terms of Carney, that is correct, Your Honor.
You think Carney controls here?
No, not at all, Your Honor. Carney, California versus Carney, dealt with a warrantless search of a motor home under the automobile exception. The automobile exception is not coming into play here because you had a valid search warrant that specifically authorized the search of a vehicle.
What about footnote 3 in Carney? Do you know about footnote 3 in Carney where the court talks about, you don't have to talk about a vehicle exception, they talk about factors?
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe that footnote, if I'm recalling correctly, the Supreme Court stated what they were not addressing is what other factors would then be to determine whether or not the automobile exception would apply. For example,
you don't think it means when a vehicle is being used as a residence in the vehicle? Footnote 3.
Right.
You have Carney in footnote 3? I don't think you briefed it, did you? Did you brief footnote 3?
I do not believe we did brief footnote 3, Your Honor.
Do you have the Carney case?
I do not have it in front of me, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I believe when
supports words. Now, I know it takes putting words around, but a warrant would be required where it's being used as a residence. You know, being used as a residence in the first sentence, and a warrant be required in the second sentence.
That is correct, Your Honor, but in this case, there was a warrant. I think that footnote, what it's saying is these are the factors that the court would look to if a warrant was necessary and if it would not fall under the automobile exception. In this case, there was a warrant. There was a warrant that specifically stated the search of any vehicles. So
I don't think they need a warrant for the residence.
That is correct, Your Honor. I do not believe that that means that it's a warrant for a residence. In this specific case, there is a warrant that included the property of 720 Holly Tree Road that included any vehicles. I do not believe that the footnote says there needs to be a separate specific warrant for a motor vehicle that is located on the property of a residence for which a search warrant has already been applied for and granted. I believe that footnote was stating when a warrant would be required if the automobile exception did not apply. Now, I don't know whether in that situation a warrant they were specifically addressing a RV that was on a parcel of land by itself, perhaps as this court addressed United States versus Schroeder, or if it was addressing a warrant in general terms for the location of the property that has been applied for.
Well, they say one key to determining whether it is the location, which you talked about.
Your Honor, and in this case, that RV was located on the property of 720 Holly Tree Road in a place that you commonly would find an RV to be parked. It was, to differentiate this from Schroeder, this was not a situation where the RV was parked within a well-demarcated balance of privilege. It was not behind the residence. There was no fence. There was no ditch separating it. There was nothing to indicate
that this. Well, this isn't a kind of curtilage, though. Do you think this is in curtilage at all?
No, it's not.
Now, curtilage is a pretty flexible procedure. If you read the Supreme Court cases, it kind of starts at the edge of the sidewalk, but you don't get a lot of protection there if you're the homeowner, right?
That's correct.
Is this a fair summary? Tell me if I'm crazy. But as you get closer to the house, you get lots of protection.
That's correct. But there is no protection in this case because the RV was located on the curtilage of that property, 720 Holly Tree Road. It was not located in other area of land. Schroeder, that case, that camper trailer vehicle was located on a completely separate property. It had a separate distinct address. It was separated by barbed wire, I believe, and foliage. It was a completely different residence. That is not the case in this situation. Once again, the actual property, 720 Holly Tree Road, includes the driveway, its front yard, its backyard, and this RV was located on, partially parked onto the driveway and the front yard of this property for which there was a valid search warrant. There was nothing to indicate to officers when they went out there that this was a separate residence.
Well, isn't that a fact issue, though? I mean, the district court said it's a two-pronged test. Is it readily movable and does it have the appearance of a residence? He said it's readily movable, but it had the side, or whatever you call it, a bump out was fully extended. It had steps, it had a grill outside, it was hooked up to utilities, it had a satellite dish on the top. They said it looks like a residence. Is that not a fact? Is that a fact that we have to determine to be a residence?
Your Honor, I do not believe so, because I think the district court was wrong. That two-prong test that's being used is what's needed under the automobile exception. I don't believe that when the search warrant specifically states any vehicles, the law enforcement officers are going out there to execute the search warrant. They need to be able to determine with specificity if that is a vehicle.
Well, how do we decide if something's a vehicle if we don't use the automobile test, which tells us what?
Because, Your Honors, I don't know what that line is, but in this specific case, I don't think that line was crossed. I think for every purpose that the law enforcement officers, when they went out there and saw this, they believed it to be a vehicle because every outward sign indicated it was a vehicle. The law indicates that it's a vehicle.
And what law are you saying tells us it's a vehicle if we don't use the automobile exception?
Your Honor, I'm talking about the law under the state of Missouri, under the state of Pennsylvania, and federal law, which defines vehicles.
Yeah, but it's trailer really counts. You keep putting vehicle in there. It's really a trailer.
But a trailer is a vehicle under purposes of the law. Both Missouri and Pennsylvania define a conveyance that is being driven on the highway, whether it's a trailer, whether it's called a fifth wheel, whether it's called a recreational vehicle, whatever it is, it's still defined as a vehicle because it's subject to the laws of the state that require it to be registered through its Department of Transportation. For example, this RV had a license plate on it. A license plate is something...
Trailers have to have license plate. May or may not know.
Yes. Yep. Because anything that has a license plate on it has to be subject to the rules and regulations of the Department of Transportation.
So you're just saying it's got a license plate, end of discussion.
Regardless of
how permanently it was affixed to the property, regardless of what else they're doing on the ground, it's got a license plate. That's all. That's the end of the discussion.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that's the end of the discussion. I just think that's one of the factors to look at. That was
how big a factor is it? Is it a big factor or a small factor?
I think it is a pretty big factor because it indicates they have to go to the Department of Revenue or Department of Transportation in your state to get that vehicle registered subject to the laws of vehicles in that state. And I believe my time right now is almost up.
Would you answer the one? Is the finding that it's a residence and not a vehicle factual finding that we have to determine? It's clearly false.
No, Your Honor. I do not believe so.
Your Honor, may I please report? My name is Brian Ridley, and I'm here on behalf of Thomas McCall. And I'd like to address the question posed just by Malloy regarding the factual finding, the fact whether or not this is a residential vehicle. I would emphatically say yes. Starting with the, I know the court has had briefs from both parties on this case, both the brief by the government and my brief and my brief.
Mr. Risley, you can see that this is a recreational vehicle.
I can see it for recreational vehicle.
So how can a recreational vehicle not be a vehicle?
Because it's a residence and as defined, set out by the findings and the specific findings that the magistrate court made its recommendation adopted by the district court that were specifically detailed in our brief. They go into the fact that it had an air conditioner. It was fully extended. It was not attached to the truck. And as they said, well, it could be ready and mobile in 30 minutes. These officers were watching this building. They were serving a search warrant. Recreational vehicle was not going anywhere at the time they searched it. Detective Kreider stated, I believe he's leaving in there at some point. When they went, they had a lock on them. They had a barbecue grill sitting outside. They had all indications of being a residence.
Right by is the truck where you put it right on there and move it in a matter of minutes. It's a finding of the trial court, too.
That is certainly a finding of the trial court, and he went both ways on that, but he ultimately making all his factual findings, making it possibly determined that for this purpose, I find...
Well, he had two factors. He said it was readily movable in the first one.
Yes.
Now, why doesn't, some way, the good faith exception apply? There's no instance of bad faith by these officers in any regard. And we have to sit here talking about it so much. Surely the good faith exception applies. It applies in more egregious circumstances than this.
The argument why I do not believe it does apply is that all of those factors were known to the officers ahead of time. Look at the testimony of Sergeant Kreider. You look at the findings of fact that that the magistrate court looked. In fact, he made a footnote regarding that specific issue wherein he stated, we already considered that evidence and we looked at the evidence that they observed ahead of time, but they observed all the fact that he was watching and he believed that he was residing there. So, even he was residing there, even as a residence. And I did cite some case law. Granted, it was not easy to find case law on this, but there was a decision out of the state of California, U.S. the Chan, that says that when they seek the scope of the search warrant, when it's based on 911, well, that would be my argument.
If somebody's living in there, is that making it longer?
No. I don't believe it would fit in that situation. I believe this set of circumstances.
So why would it
think they can be. I think in the situation of this, and the finding that the district court made in this case, is that relying on the party, they rely on Frisco and other factors. In the situation of a recreational vehicle, having the ability to be both, you know, something that can be transported down the road, but also something that can be sitting and fixed and basically used as a person. Live in a different world at a different time, where many people decide that they're going to take up residence in a recreational vehicle. And that is what happened here, and it had all the appearances of it when the officer approached the scene.
It doesn't necessarily lose its characteristic as a vehicle.
I'm not going to say you're telling that it loses its characteristic as a vehicle. I'm just, my argument to the court would be that the findings made here in the district court should not be overruled because.
Okay, so if you and I are both struggling with that concept, why is Judge Matlin going to? Why would it be bad faith? Officers to assume that it still had characteristics of a vehicle and therefore was authorized under the circumstances.
I go back to this, just the investigation they did beforehand and the hand when they walked in there and they see the lock and they see everything else and they approach it to be a residence and the specific requirements needed for a search warrant to specify, you know, if there are two separate residences on a search warrant. We have to specifically identify both residences. They could have stopped here. They could have went and applied for a second search warrant related to that. They did not do so because they didn't want to search. In fact, in this case, they later applied for a second search warrant and they didn't even list it again, knowing that these issues have risen. So, based on that, I just, my arguments would be that it makes exceptions not
enough. And you need to talk to me about inevitable discovery, too. Goodness gracious. This is not going to be inevitably discovered. What is, that's too many negatives. But you got my point. It looks like inevitable discovery should apply here. Not going anywhere. Go ahead.
I rely again on what the district court found, where they basically, there's the two prongs, and the fact that they essentially are using evidence that they obtained while they're in the residence, and they're both speaking with them. We get to the portion of inevitable discovery, gather information from him on that. Magistrate courts and their recommendation findings went through it. Only to meet the approach, they did find the first problem applied, but they did not find the second problem applied because there was no independent subsequent investigation going on. Officers.
Well, it doesn't say subsequent counsel. There is some slippage in our cases, but an actual other investigating method is Munoz. Munoz is a pretty tough, you know, are you familiar with Munoz? The backpack case? Boy, how can you distinguish Munoz from what's really happening here?
The argument I would have to the court is that on this case, they had an investigation going. Prior sent on the house, Prior did an investigation, Prior then submitted the search warrant, and they exceeded the scope of the search warrant. They kind of burned their issue regarding that discovery.
Think the pre-search interview is not an actual other investigating method?
The pre-search one, which the court did not suppress, there was an investigation again, which they said there was a computer contained there. That was not there. But again, my argument would be is once they exceeded the scope of the search warrant and found that, they should not be rewarded or benefited from the fact that they now obtained a computer by violating the term of the search warrant, and then they're going to gain. They were continuing to question him, and those statements were suppressed to gather more information on the subject in question, the computer in question. And those are the reasons why, again, the magistrate court went to detail findings on why they believe.
But they do talk to Hal, the mother and the girlfriend, before they search. That's what
correct.
I'm talking about, the pre-search interview.
Yes.
You don't think that's an actual other investigative method that being used?
My opinion would be it's all, or my argument to the court is that it's all in line with this same investigation leading up to it and the search warrant and the serving of the search warrant and asking questions in line with that. So, again, while the court did not suppress those statements, it's all entailed into one conclusive investigation. There was no no separate investigation where they're pursuing other leads or that they're doing anything else. They had information that there may be information on this case and put an officer on the scene to do a search and to establish the probable cause to take the search warrant. They take the search warrant. They again went up to the RV, which appeared to be a resident. They asked questions, but everything after that, which the district court suppressed, again ties into an argument is they should not be rewarded for taking that evidence. Based on the fact that both might get replaced. If that was the case, then all search warrants that have issues with them or where evidence can't be suppressed, they can say, well, we're going to find it anyway.
Well, that's a little bit what Munoz says at the end, right?
It does, in fact, yes.
A lot of your arguments centered on Missouri and Pennsylvania statutory definitions of.
That is correct. My initial response to that was that if you look at the appellant's initial brief, they focused on motor vehicle and recreational vehicle and looking at motor vehicle. And I was trying to make a distinction that this, in fact, this will have no motor vehicle, none of that decided. And again, it appeared they were going to have the argument that this is a critical motion to get it and drive it away. So I did, again, make that argument. Pointed out by Judge Benton that the word trailer does have the word vehicle, and again, the state is in there. But
you can see the lack of order doesn't carry the day.
Now, with regard to the fact that the search warrant states vehicle, and again, the trailer is a vehicle for that purpose, again, I'm simply trying to address some of the arguments that the appellant's counsel made with regard to their relying on. Definition like a motor vehicle and RV and tying those together. But again, at the end of the day, the district court determined the RV to be residence subject to the search and arrest and report that whole thing. I think that's all I have.
Thank you, counsel.
Just briefly going back to your last question to me, whether or not this court needs to find here. District court's factual finding that the RV is a resident, and I answered no. The reason why is because that factual finding is correct. The RV was being used as the residence, but what is that error here is that the court relied on that as a distinguishing factor of whether or not it was an actual vehicle. The court should not have relied on Carney and the two-part automobile exception test, finding that because it was also being used as a residence, it no longer was a vehicle under the
It, it almost sounds, though, that your argument is more along the lines of what Judge Benton mentioned. It was a good faith determination. Why did you just argue that this was a, they may have been wrong, it was used as a residence, but given its outward appearances with the license plate and so on, they acted in good faith.
And that's correct. Even outside of if this was not a vehicle under the terms of the search warrant, the officers did act in good faith. Every indicator they had to them indicated that it was a vehicle. In fact, once they went inside the RV while they were searching it, they took a picture of the vehicle identification number, which is assigned by federal law to all vehicles that are on the roadway. And underneath that, it said that this vehicle had the tire and loading information. It also said that this vehicle was subject to the United States safety standards for motor vehicles.
Would you agree that surely can't be the test? You live in southern Missouri, where I'm from. They take all kinds of things and make them into houses and pig bins and everything in the world, right? So that can't be the test, right?
Yes.